There's a nightstand by the bed. And it feels like he left things here for me. That sicko. There's a tall glass of water. Don't drink it, John. But I sip the water because I'm still me. Because my throat burns and I don't have the willpower to resist. There's a battered little book, and I pick that up too. The Dunwich Horror by H.P. Lovecraft. Eerie green tentacles spread over the front of the book. It's pretty beat up. If you brought this back to our library at school, Mrs. Wyman would ream you for it. I open the book. It's tiny, less than 100 pages. I stop on Mr. Blair's favorite parts, the things he underlined. Wilbur Whately was born at 5 a.m., deformed, unattractive. Dogs abhorred the boy. You grows, and that grows faster. The most important words aren't in the story. They're on the other side of the front cover in a letter from Mr. Blair to me. I know his handwriting from school. John, you were in a medically induced coma. You are fine. You are free. Free to do as you wish. But a few words of advice from your old teacher. Time moves forward. You should too. You have power. Power that will present itself to you slowly so as not to overwhelm you. Take it in stride. You're special, John. You always have been. But going forward, you'll find that being special is a good thing. We did good work down here, John. And it will be interesting to see the way things play out. You're welcome, John. R.B. The words blur before my eyes. We did good work down here. No, we didn't. There is no we, you sicko. I don't know what he's talking about. I don't remember anything. How long have I been down here? I didn't like Mr. Blair then, and I don't like him now. My head aches and my hands quiver, trying to build a bridge between the then and now of it. Back then, he was a weirdo with a frizzy mullet. He was always eating yogurt and licking the lids in front of the whole class. He was always trying to be my friend. He'd look at me sometimes in front of everyone like I was a teacher, like I wasn't a kid. Do you believe these idiots, John? People laughed because nobody wants to be buddies with the sub. When Kerrig superglued my hands to my desk, Mr. Blair said I could run circles around that moron. I remember thinking that he was making it all worse by standing up for me. There's nothing worse than the wrong person being on your side. You have power, power that will present itself to you slowly so as not to overwhelm you. What the hell does that mean? Back then, he was the weirdest sub, hands down. He called us pussies. You care so much what other people think. You let your peers know that you care. Waste your energy collecting approval from strangers. The next time we had him, we were scared of him. He called us delicate flowers. Didn't your mothers teach you about the difference between sticks, stones, and words? No matter what he did, he always came back. Even after the time he spit at Kerrig, you'll never be anything, you khaki little shit. Nobody told the principal. You don't tattle on a sub. You just go to your next class. I never made fun of Mr. Blair. But here I am. We did good work down here, John. I throw the Dunwich Horror at the wall. I wish he didn't write anything in the book. I wish there was no letter. I wish it could be simpler. That some bully freak kidnapped me and locked me up, me against him. But the thing about the book, the letter, now he's made me a part of something. I can't leave the book here for someone else to find. It's mine now, like it or not. My fucking horror. I shove it in my back pocket. You're welcome, John. There are brand new sneakers by the door. Nikes, socks, too. It's a shock to be tying up laces, blinking and crouching. I am surprised that I can move, that I can run up the stairs. I must be over 6 feet tall, and I take 2 steps at a time. I was never this strong, this big, and I spin a globe in my mind. I could be anywhere in the world. Siberia, Tennessee. I'm not even a little bit out of breath when I reach the top of the stairs, and my throat is less sore now than it was before. I open the door and step into a black box of a room where the walls are covered in old calendars. There's something familiar about it. A scent that tells me I'm not in Siberia. I open another door and it's brighter in here. This is an empty shop and the storefront windows are plastered with aging yellow telegraphs. Home. I hear Muzak. There are stronger smells now. Mustard and cinnamon. Things you put on pretzels. And then it hits me. I am in the mall. The mall. It's almost as bad as the book in my back pocket. The impossible lameness of it all, that I get kidnapped by a sub and shoved in the basement of the mall. The mall. I stare down at my large body. This whole time I was down here, however long it was. We did good work down here, John. This whole time while I was asleep, everyone I know was up here, on top of me, buying stuff on sale and returning it and stealing gum, trying out lacrosse sticks in the back room on that puke green carpet at Rolling Jack's. They were going to Tenley's, to the movies, giving hickeys and getting hickeys. They were here, and I was here. The mall. The mall. I don't know why I expected to be far away, but I did. Something extraordinary has happened, and it feels like the journey home should be more dramatic. Like years have passed, and people should be zooming around in jetpacks. The Dunkin' Donuts is still here, the same as ever, always with new items. This time they're pushing snickerdoodle croissant donuts. An old man sits at a table with a glazed cruller and a telegraph. When he finishes his donut and stands to go, he leaves the paper behind. It's scary, but I have to do it. I have to know what year it is. And I look at the top corner of the page, and there it is. The number blinks out at me. Unfathomable. 4 years. 4 years. I lost 4 years of my life. Roger Blair took them from me. He stole the one thing you can't get back. Time. My hands shake as I turn the pages of the paper. I see coupons for restaurants I know, restaurants I don't know. And then I'm on the move. For a while, I just walk, the way old people do in malls. I have to get my head together before I go back to my life. I make decisions without meaning to make decisions. I will tell them the truth. I woke up in the basement. I don't remember a single thing. But I will never tell anyone about the Dunwich Horror. I will never tell anyone about this letter. I tuck the evil little book into the waistband of my pants, and I go into the old Radio Shack. Now it's called Meditations. Wind chimes are tinkling, and fountains are gurgling, and a happy hippie greets me at the register. She says, of course I can use the phone. I remember my mom's number, and I'm dialing, and my fingers are big, too big. And the woman squints. Wait a minute, she says. Are you John Bronson?
Chloe. Noelle pumps the squirt gun. So, did you guys do it yet? It's one of the grosser things about my friends. Their curiosity. We're about to graduate, and the summer is starting to feel like this painful stretch of highway we have to get through before college. I'm ready for a new world, one I can't fully imagine. One where people don't say, do it. Marlene intervenes. Noelle, you know they didn't do it yet. Why do you even ask? Unreal, Noelle says. By now his balls must be dark blue. Or light blue. Sky blue? I'm the virgin, with a capital V, in the horror movie version of our lives, even though Marlene's a virgin too. It's because I'm with Carrig. Have been since the summer after John disappeared. Noelle's been annoyed ever since, that I would go from being Little Miss Goth Girl to Little Miss I Fuck Lacrosse Players. But technically, I don't, and this annoys her. Chloe, she says, don't take this the wrong way, but it feels like you're clinging to your drama. I mean, what are you trying to prove by putting it off? I throw her a bone. We'll probably end up doing it after prom. It was the wrong thing to say, and she rolls her eyes at Marlene, as if I'm blind. Well played, Sayers. Way to make prom night all about you. She's not wrong. There's something phony about me that I don't like. Something that keeps me from sleeping normally. From sleeping with Carrig. I can't help but think that a true artist wouldn't be here sipping on spiked seltzers and waiting for her jock boyfriend to show up. A real artist would be in her studio, painting, pining, like a whaler's wife. You can't have it both ways. But you have to defend yourself. So I remind them that Care's going to BU and I'm going to NYU. We're not even going to be in the same city, so it's like, why take it to the next level, you know? Noelle grunts. Right. Because none of us are in the exact same boat. Jeez, Chloe, we're all going away. And then it's back to talking about prom, about dresses and limos, the generic glory of being this close to the end. Noelle squeals. They're here, the boys. And the butterflies do flutter inside of me. I love my boyfriend. Gorgeous, patient, we can wait, Care. I scramble to fluff my hair, adjust my bikini bottom. I tread water, full of want, unable and unwilling to scrape the smile off my face. Grateful that it's there, that I'm here, waving to him as he yanks his shirt over his head. Revealing his body, the lacrosse bruises, the way he winks at me as he dives in the water, inviting me to wrap my legs around him. Hey, C. I love his voice. I love this pool. I love going to Rolling Jacks with him, being the girl to his boy. I go weeks without looking at a newspaper. I giggle whenever we sneak into his dad's back room where he hoards his guns. I chew gum, and I don't know who's the Secretary of State. I don't miss crying myself to sleep, explaining to police officers that John and I were just friends. Care is here, always. When our legs touch, I feel alive. My whole life, I've wished that he wouldn't go around shooting helpless animals and picking fights with younger kids. Weaker kids. John, I've always thought you can't change people. But in the pool, I feel powerful. I see how much he wants to be with me. How willing he is to make the first move. I imagine a world where he doesn't hunt. Where he isn't a bully. A world where he's with me. We're good for each other. Better together than we are apart. Sometimes I almost think John left so I could be here, in the water, fully. Carrig's it now, moving toward me. Our toes touch and he smiles. Marco, he says. I know how the game works. I don't say polo. I take a deep breath and disappear down into the water, silently inviting him to come find me. Unlike John, who left nothing for me, not a note, not a clue, nothing. Instead, I hear a noise, the unmistakable sound of Noelle's mother opening the sliding door, invading our space. I reach the surface and everyone is staring at me. They know something that I don't know. Noelle's mom is waving her phone, pacing. "They found him," she says. "They found who?" I ask. "John," she says, like he was my hamster. Mine. "Chloe, they found your friend." We are treading water. We are supposed to go to the movies, to the woods. I am going to ruin everything by leaving. It won't work with an uneven number. Without me. 5 are not 6. I look at Carrig, but he looks at the wall, leaving me before I can leave him. So I do it. I go. I get out of the pool. I dry off with a towel. Everyone else stays. I shiver. I feel so naked, as if I have no bikini on. "Hurry up, Chloe. Your mother's already on her way." I don't know if I am going because I want to go or because I have to go. I just know that this feels like going to the dentist. They found your friend. 4 years ago, I was a different person. I would have given up everything for John. I have things to give up now. John is taking them away. I'm a shittier person than I was back then. I want to be in the pool. It doesn't matter. My mom is outside, beeping. I'm in the front seat of my mom's car, looking out the window, my hair soaking wet. My teeth chatter. Marco, Polo, John, Carrig. "What's wrong?" my mom asks. "Besides the obvious. I know I'm in shock. Are you okay? Because nobody says we have to go over there." "Mom, of course we do," I say. "I'm fine. I'm just cold." She blasts the heat. I look out the window. My phone is ringing. Carrig. I put it on silent. And now a text comes through. "It's me, Chloe. Me." I don't know what to write back to him. I am not the girl who saved the papers for him. I am the girl who threw them away. I can't think of anything to say, and everything I come up with sounds trite or cold or just plain shallow. And now it's too late. We're here. I put my phone into my bag and feel my heart start to pump. It's real. There are trucks everywhere. TV crews. My mom puts the car in park. "Do you want me to go in with you?" If she wanted to stay, she would turn off the engine. It's as if we're in a time machine. She wants to know how long I'll be, which is not a question she asks when she brings me to Noelle's. And then she gasps. I look out the front window, and I know why my mom is slamming the brakes. It's my John, but it isn't. The man standing in the driveway, waving, is what they'd call a hunk in one of those old TV shows. My mother just about swoons. "My God, Chloe, that can't be him." My heart bursts. "That's him," I say. "I'm sure." I've been so worried about the ways I've changed that I forgot about him, how he's changed. All the times I imagined him at this age, Every time I drew him, pushed him forward another year, lowered his brow, his eyelids, widened his jaw. All my machinations never resulted in anything like this. When I step out of the car, he starts to jog toward me, and I'm rushing toward him, crying. I am so close I can smell him, but then I lose my balance, my legs, my breath. I trip on my own feet. I feel blood drip from my nose, and the TV trucks are swirling into a tornado, up, up, and away, and the ground is sucking me in, pulling me under. I don't get to say hello. I don't get to kiss him. I disappear, out cold.
John. And just like that, everything is wrong again. Everything is like it was back then. Everything is off, askew. She was supposed to throw her arms around me, and we were supposed to kiss and start this new chapter in our lives, but instead she took one look at me and she passed out. The doctors say it's normal. She went into shock. This sort of thing happens. But it didn't feel normal. It made me hear Mr. Blair in my head again. We did good work down here, John. It made me want to read his letter. My mom knocks on my door. I bury the book under my pillow.
Yeah.
She comes in, beaming. I've never seen her this revved up. She's like a brand new car, full of pep, jerky, laughing one minute, crying the next.
We're gonna need to get you a new bed, honey. Start thinking about what color sheets you might want. Maybe we could paint? Maybe a nice bright blue?
Maybe, I say. I move closer to the pillow. I put my elbow on the pillow. She can't see that book, ever. I feel like Gollum with the ring. I feel like the goddamn book is making me weird, undoing all the good she sees. So handsome, so big. She doesn't realize I'm a mess. She's tearing the tags off shirts that someone brought over. All day our house has been a zoo with cops and doctors and reporters, friends bringing casseroles and clothes. The dog's barking again. They got a dog, Cody Kardashian Bronson. And she winces. My mom said it saved her life to get a dog.
Are you sure you don't want him to come in here?
Mom, I just kind of want some space. She nods. She fiddles with the book I was reading when he took me. The book about marshmallow fluff.
I wish I had better things to say, she says. You know, wisdom.
Mom, you say the right things. She hugs the fluff book.
I just missed you so much. I'm sorry I'm such a basket case. I'm sorry that we took your Spider-Man wallpaper down. I'm sorry the bed's not big enough, and I'm sorry about Chloe, and I'm sorry I keep falling apart on you.
I take the book out of her hands and hug her. I feel bad that I'm not crying, and I feel scared of my body, like I'm not holding her right, like I don't do anything right, the same way I felt when I was a kid. I think of Chloe falling onto the ground, the blood spilling out from her nose, her split knee. And suddenly my mom gasps.
Whoa,
she says.
Honey, I don't think you realize your own strength.
When we pull apart, there are two little streams of blood dribbling from her nose. I held her so hard that she's bleeding. I hear him again, Roger Blair. You're welcome, John. It was the same thing with my mom as it was with Chloe. The doctors say it's shock, perfectly normal to have a physical reaction in a situation like this. But nothing feels perfectly normal to me. I've been home a couple days now and Chloe hasn't come back to see me. Her mother thinks she's sick. She thinks she caught a bug, so she's making her stay home. My dad passes out a lot. He drinks too much and he leaves his records on, but it's another thing that feels off somehow. The way we'll be sitting there watching TV and one minute he's awake and then one minute he's not. I lock my door.
I read The Dunwich Horror 3 times in a row. It's a hard book to get through, and I skip around to the parts that Mr. Blair underlined. It takes place in a small town in New England, and of course I picture our town, our streets, even though this book takes place a long time ago. The main guy is Wilbur Whately, and he's basically the town freak. He grows really fast. People are horrified by him. Dogs run away. He's a giant. Wilbur is really smart and twisted, and he's missing a couple pages from his Necronomicon book. He needs those pages in order to summon the bad guys, the old ones. But the librarians are on to him. They're afraid of what he's gonna do if he gets his hands on those pages. So they ice him out. He won't take no for an answer, and he dies trying to get those pages. A dog eats him. There's no blood, no guts. He's only part human. I hear Roger's voice again. "You're welcome, John." The main part of the book, the actual horror, comes at the end. This invisible beast ravages the town. He leaves giant prints on the ground. I picture a dinosaur, but I don't know if I'm right. I tell myself I will put it away and put it out of my head. I should focus on real things, figuring out about school, talking to reporters, police. But it's almost as if the tentacles on the book are holding me. As if they've grown out of the cover and onto my hands, snaking up my arms, into my ears. Eating with my mom and dad always helps. I feel more like me every time I eat her overcooked broccoli and hear about Grey's Anatomy. My dad and his red solo cup of scotch, teasing her about the broccoli, about her shows. This is my life. This is my family. But I always blow it somehow. I eat too fast. I ask my mom for her phone. She puts her fork down. "Why do you need the phone?" "'Cause I was gonna text Chloe." They say nothing. "I won't be on it all night, I swear." My mom sighs. "John," she says, "I think you need to cool your jets." My dad won't look me in the eye. My mom scoops the dog up onto her lap. "What do you mean?" I ask. I'm already turning red. "We're just talking. She's just telling me about stuff, you know? Stuff I missed. She's going to NYU, stuff about school. What's the big deal?" My dad drinks his scotch. My mom kisses the dog. "John," she says. "Does she mention anything about her boyfriend?" My heart starts to pound because I knew it. You always know it. You feel it and you push the hunch away like the bad book, the bad letter. I knew she was too polite and I knew she was using too many exclamation points and I knew something was a little different about her. I told myself I was staying off Facebook and all the other social places because the shrink I saw the day I got back said it would be too overwhelming. But the truth is, I didn't want to see it with my own eyes. I didn't want to know. "It's Carrig, isn't it?" My mom shakes her head no, but the word comes out like a hiss. "Yes." I can't sleep. I did text Chloe again, but I didn't tell her I know. She asked me more questions. "Do you even kind of remember anything? Were you dreaming? What did you do when you woke up? Do you remember that first moment? What's the very last thing you remember? Why do you think he took you? I mean, were you ever scared of him? It's all anyone can talk about at school, how weird he was, how it's so scary to think of him out there, how it's such bad luck that it was you. It's not fair, John. Do they think they'll catch him? You remember when he wanted us to prick our fingers for some genetic test thing? When he wanted us to pull out our hair? It's literally insane that he was in our school. I think about it. I get so mad. You must get so mad. Do you?" I can't ask her my questions. "Do you really like Carrig Burkus? How did it start? Why? Did he kiss you? Do you bring him into our shed? Did you ever want to kiss me the way you kiss him? Do you have sex with him? Do you talk like this with him? How can you be one way with me and another way with him? Did you miss me? Did you stop missing me? Do you really love him? Do you? How can you love him? How? When Cody Kardashian scratches at the door, I decide to let him in for once. I pat the bed. Come on up. He wags his tongue. I want to tell him that he's wasting his time, that I'm a hamster person. But he's hell-bent on being my friend. He rolls over and yelps and snuggles into me, burrowing. He loves me. Chloe doesn't. I start crying again, and Cody doesn't turn away the way a lot of people would. He moves closer to me. I scoop him up. Thanks, little guy. And then before you know it, I'm sleeping. I'm dreaming of being with Chloe. We're in my house, which is the shed. And then the curtain falls the way it does when you leave a good dream. When it hurts to wake up. To realize that nothing is that simple right now. As soon as I wake up, I feel it. The hard form curled next to me. Cold, where there had been warmth. The silence, where there had been panting breath. I feel it in my bones, and I start to cry before I see Cody's lifeless body. I know what happened. I know the smell of death. I think we all do. I can't scream. I can't wake my parents. I can't believe what I see. This dead dog. He came into this room in perfect health, and now he's gone. He saved your mother's life. She can never know. I put on those new sneakers that I was excited about only a few hours ago. I pick up his little body. There's no other way around it. My parents are still asleep when I get back home from burying Cody. I'm on high alert, as if I've had 10 cups of coffee. I'm awake, jittery. My body hums like a city that never sleeps. Green lights as far as the eye can see. Lights that never turn red. The chaos, the noise in me, the zzzz. My mother is up first, like always. She whistles, Cody boy, come find mama. When she can't find him, when she doesn't hear him barking, she wakes up my dad. He startles and she snaps, I told you that doggy door was a bad idea. He groans, and I learn the brief history of the doggy door. Cody goes out and he doesn't come home. Like a criminal, I realize that I'm gonna get away with this. As if I did something. I didn't. Did I? My dad opens the slider and I peer out of my window and watch him out there, clapping his hands, whistling, Cody, boy, come on. My mother's downstairs puttering around, looking for a lighter, finding a lighter, making her way up the stairs and closing her bedroom door. She squeezes the doorknob so that I can't hear the button pop when she locks the door. She probably thinks I'm sleeping, has no idea that I'm pretending. She's a good mom. She doesn't want to wake me, doesn't want me to hear her crying. She did this when I was a kid, when she wanted to be sad about something, when she didn't want to be a mom for a minute or two. Soon I can hear the familiar old sound of her choking on her tears as my dad screams, Cody! I open the Dunwich Horror. Roger's words jump off the page. You're welcome, John. I'm starting to get paranoid, starting to think something's wrong with me. Chloe fainting, my mom's bloody nose, my dad passing out, Cody is dead. And I spin out. I imagine myself the invisible monster, slaughtering them all. Cool your jets, John. That's a made-up story, and it's possible it doesn't even have anything to do with me. Roger Blair is a weirdo, and weirdos read weird things. He probably just needed a place to write his letter, but then I'm spinning again because that's right. The letter. What did he mean? Interesting to see how things play out. What did he mean about me being special, having power? What I would give to see him again. The painful irony of wanting it more than anything, more than a kiss from Chloe. I hear my mom on the phone. Hello? She says. Is this the right number to report a missing dog? When she's downstairs, I go online and look at pictures of the new me. The articles about Basement Boy, Miracle in Nashua. I'm a feel-good story standing between my parents. The before me is puny and awkward, and the now me is strong, towering over my parents. I see the drawings Chloe made for the police. It all looks so good in here, like things worked out. It's like the producer from Ellen told my mom, "We love your son because he's an inspiration." I Google Roger Blair and find every article I can about him. How he was a professor at Brown before he was fired. How he did experiments involving plants and bananas and the sun. None of it makes sense, and soon my head is spinning. I turn off the lights and stare at the ceiling. I can't see in the dark, and I can almost pretend that I'm back in the basement, and Roger Blair is gonna come in and tell me what he did to me. What he did to me for real. The next morning, my mom is posting pictures of Cody on her Facebook page, and my dad is scrubbing the front porch. Someone egged our house last night, she says. What can I tell you, John? When it rains, it pours.
Chloe, there's no good place to break someone's heart. I choose the patio in front of Starbucks. Maybe it will be easier to end things because I'm wearing my uniform, because my break has a beginning, a middle, an end. And we do need to end it. It started fizzling the day John got back, the moment I climbed out of that pool. Carrig hasn't forgiven me for ditching him to go see John. He's been cold to me ever since. He doesn't trust me anymore. But he won't let me slip away, either. Boys like Carrig, boys who play lacrosse and take abuse from coaches, they want everything to be official. Winners and losers, goals and misses. So here he is, crunching on the last chunks of ice, refusing to let me drift away. Sorry I haven't been around much, I say. I picked up some extra shifts. New York is just gonna be so expensive, you know? And I'm so behind in everything, I even had to get an extension for my art class. He smiles at the concrete. A shitty smile. Right, he says. You're busy. Carrig, I don't know what you mean by that. I'm telling you the truth.
I'm not stupid, Chloe.
Who said you're stupid? He bites his lower lip. I've never seen him cry. I don't want to see him cry. I reach for his hand, but he pulls it away.
Stop saying you're busy with work, he says. Just fucking say it.
Say what? It's easy to imagine his eyes exploding right here on the patio.
It's fucking John, he croaks. Just say it.
Nothing is happening between me and John. He squeezes his empty cup.
Just say it. Say you're fucking done with me.
I don't want to say it. I want Carrig to give up on me, to stomp off into the parking lot, delete my number, tell me to go fuck myself. His left leg shakes. His cheeks turn red. He will suffer and simmer, but he won't be the one to go.
Is this 'cause I egged his fucking house?
You did what? He clenches his jaw. He thought I knew. Now he knows I didn't know.
And now I have this image of him throwing raw eggs at John's house. I can see the yolks dripping on the windows. I rub my eyes.
It was just a joke, he says.
Care, egg whites are corrosive. You can really do damage.
It's just egging a house.
No, I say, it's not.
Yeah, he says. Well, you can do some pretty sick shit too, Chloe. Just saying.
There is no swearing or stomping. He just walks away. I watch him charge into the parking lot. He doesn't look both ways and he almost gets run over by a truck. He flips off the driver and yanks his door open. And I've never felt so mean in my life. So powerful and responsible. So bad. I did that. Me. I try to write to John, but I can't find the words. How can I tell him it's over when I hate having to admit it happened in the first place? A few weeks later, I show up at Noelle's with cake pops and frappuccinos, and she looks me up and down.
Who are you?
She asks. Noelle, come on. People get jobs. She takes the frappuccino.
So, she says, how are things in Johnland?
That's what she calls it. She won't just say, how's John?
He's great, I say. Same as ever. I sit down to talk to him and we never run out of things to talk about, and sometimes we're texting and chatting and then we find a movie to watch and before you know it, it's 4 a.m.
She stares at me.
So let me get this straight, she says. You broke it off with Carrig and still it's just talking? Christ, I assumed by now there would be something going on.
Noelle, come on. You know it's complicated. Do you even go to a movie ever?
He has PTSD.
Wait, she says. When is the last time you just plain even hung out with a kid? I don't answer the question because she knows the answer. She knows John won't hang out with me. She says she's not mad at me. She's mad for me. She rolls her eyes.
You're like a human security blanket. You even look different, Chloe. Are you painting at all? Or do you just like text 24/7?
Yes, I say. I snap. I'm painting. She shakes her head. She knows I'm lying.
Dude, she says, he survived. I don't feel sorry for the kid. He didn't get molested by aliens.
Noelle. Her eyes bulge.
Did he?
She does this every time. Her tone shifts and everything is a question, a doubt. She wants to know what we talk about. I tell her the truth. Last night, we spent several hours comparing live versions of the Hippocampus song, Way It Goes.
No, she says. What do you talk about?
I know what she wants because I would want it too. She wants the goods, the things you tell your best friend, his nightmares, the things they don't put in the paper. But I don't know anything. It hurts to feel the words come out of my mouth. We still don't talk about that stuff. I avoid her eyes. I know it's odd that John doesn't talk to me about what happened. It's like he's always trying to prove that he's normal. We talk about me, about my art, about his conviction that nothing will ever top Hippocampus at the Valley Bar in Phoenix, Arizona on May 7th, 2016. But he won't talk about himself. Not really.
It's fucked up, she says. You dumped Carrig and you don't even see John. I don't understand this doormat syndrome.
The word stings.
I'm not a doormat. So why isn't John here right now? You don't think that's weird that you never see him?
The worst times in life are when you do know and you don't know. Day after day, I ask him to come over for a middle marathon, and he deflects, harps on me to read that Dunwich horror book. I never ask him why he won't so much as go for a walk with me. Our connection has always been more about how we implicitly understand each other. I don't want to prod. I don't like talking about John with Noelle, and I bite her head off with words I can't take back. I think nothing is ever easy with your soulmate. It was a mean thing to say, the kind of thing that makes her pick up her phone and twirl her hair. There's a silence now. I know I should apologize and tell her that she's right, that I do wish John would see me, that it's eating me alive. But the thing about things that break your heart, it's hard to validate them by saying them out loud. I just keep thinking tomorrow he'll show up. Tomorrow I'll be telling Noelle about our first kiss, and everything will be normal. So, she says, in that little girl voice you only hear at times like this, are you guys gonna go to prom? I shrug. We'll see. I drop hints about prom to John every day. He never says yes. But then he also hasn't said no. She sighs. I'll tell Penguin to tell Care that he can bring his soft whore. I've known about Carrig and the new girl for a week. But still, I gasp. Wait, I say. He has a girlfriend? Noelle needed to have something over me. Me and my soulmate. I put on a show. Playing the exasperated ex. John is bad for you, she says. You might not realize it, but he's punishing you for being with Carrig. And you're letting him. Chloe, the thing is, you're allowed to be happy. If John loved you, he would want you to be happy. You look like a zombie. She is on her feet, emboldened. I'm getting you some water. When she's gone, I look over those last texts with Carrig. He texted me the very first night he met the soft whore. He was drunk, jealous. He was all over the place. I love you, I hate you. I called in the next day to try and talk about it, but he didn't pick up. He just sent one last text. Don't remember any of that. Senior moment. Delete. Later that night, I'm tipsy on spiked seltzers. I stare at the white space in the chat window, the absence of dots. He doesn't know what to say to me, and I'm too drunk to say the right thing, so I say the crazy thing. I want to see you, really see you. And then I see those little dots. Here he comes. I know, he says. It's an infuriating response, especially because of today. Defending him comes so naturally to me in the moment, but then to come home to him, to my computer, and realize nothing has changed, that today isn't tomorrow. Today is going to be more texting, more typing. He starts in about an article on the founder of Starbucks that he found online, and that launches us into a big talk about discovery and invention and risk and ambition and knowing and not knowing and original thinking, and it feels like a dirty trick of the universe. We can talk about everything except us. I tell him I want to see him, and he says it again. I know. What does he know? Does he know he's making me crazy? Does he know I go to sleep with makeup on in case he shows up? Does he know I drive by his house? I see him on the swing set in his backyard. I watch him as he lies to me about being busy. I try to tell myself that it's got nothing to do with me, that it's PTSD. But deep down, I don't believe it. People do what they want to do. And if John wanted to see me, he would.
You can't make someone love you. He never kissed me when we were kids. Why should it be any different now? I vow to end this thing. Block him. I open the email I keep in drafts, my literal Dear John letter, where I tell him I can't do this anymore, can't set myself up for this daily rejection. The wording is strong, direct. I tell him I'm not a horny monster who's going to attack him. I will always be here for you if you just want to be friends. Of course, I don't send the letter. He pops up in a chat window. Chloe, are you home? I should ignore him. Noelle says you have to train men like dogs. Marlene says to buck up and ask him to prom. But I'm afraid of what he might say. That he doesn't love me. That I come on too strong, too hungry. It's easier to slip into conversation, into hippocampus. As always, it gets late. Really late, and he drifts away from the chat. It was the opposite with Carrig. With him, I was always first to go. I miss the power that comes with being the one who doesn't say goodbye, the one who just disappears.
John, I always log off first. I know it's a shitty thing to do to leave her hanging, but this thing in me, the thing that might be in me, the invisible poison, the thing I have no name for, the thing I call my jets, the thing that kills dogs and makes my dad pass out, this thing is scary. I don't know how it works. So far, it only seems to work when I'm physically close to people, but Roger said I'm growing. And if he was talking about this thing, the power, then who's to say it's not strong enough to worm its way through the computer into Chloe? I think I'm paranoid, and maybe crazy. Sometimes I think he only gave me this book and this letter to fuck with my head, that this is just the kind of thing an evil person does. I grab my jacket. I look in the mirror and I think, just do it. Go to her house or show up where she works and kiss her already. But then I remember Cody's little body. The stillness. I'm running out of time. Eventually, she's gonna get sick of me. She's gonna want more. She's gonna want less. Every day, I expect her to say the terrible words, "We need to stop talking." But she must feel it too. The connection, this thing between us, a vine. My shrink Beverly says I'm not a parasite. She's older than my mom, but younger than a grandma, and we Skype like this once or twice a week. I'd never tell her about my Dunwich theory, but it's nice to pretend she knows it all, to think of her thinking she has the whole story. So, she says, did your mom get her test results? Yeah, I say. She doesn't have lupus, they don't think. Well, good, she says. That's good news, John. She's a little too cheery sometimes, or maybe she does that on purpose to set me off. I start ranting at her about how it isn't that simple. Good. My mom is weak and sick, and she passes out all the time. She has no balance. She gets bloody noses. My dad nods off. They're both sick, and no doctors can figure out what the hell is going on. Beverly says what she always says. It's not your fault, John. This is the hardest part of the session, when I want to tell her that she doesn't get it, that it might be me, that I might be making them sick, literally. She talks about emotions and stress, but she doesn't understand that this thing in me, it's not in her books. And if I told her, she'd probably make me go into a hospital where you do puzzles and take drugs. And then she says the thing she says every week, the warning about so much in my life. Our time is up. I still haven't found Roger, and the cops have no leads, and in all the crime shows, it's harder to find someone every day. After I talk to Beverly, I always call Detective Chiquelis. Hi there, I say on his voicemail. It's John Bronson. I was just calling to see if there are any leads on Roger Blair. A few minutes later, he sends me a lame-o email. Take it easy, John. Be happy you're in such good health. Try to be happy, John. We'll let you know if anything comes up. But I can't be happy. I have too many questions for Roger. I've marked up every page of that stupid, evil little book, and I can't figure out what he meant by it. Lovecraft talks a lot about Wilbur being an albino, and I asked my parents if we have any albino blood in our family, and they looked at me and laughed, and my dad said, Scottish is a euphemism for albino, son. What made you wonder about that? I lied and said it was something from my GED class. I pull the blankets over my head. I try to cut through 4 years of fog. I walk through the woods in my mind. Didn't I hear something in all that time? Didn't my eyes open once, commit one image to the back of my mind? Did Roger carry me, or did he stuff me into a wheelbarrow? Did he have a friend waiting with a car, or did he act alone? Did he mumble, or was he silent? Did I struggle? My mom knocks on the door. Hungry? The comfort of her overcooked broccoli, my dad's scotch and red solo cups. It isn't the same as it was when I first got home. I'm too old. I'm in the house too much. I don't fit here. We all know it, and things are starting to get tense. The only thing we can talk about with ease is Roger Blair. My mom is always game to rave about the fact that my school should have known he was fired from Brown University. Should have been locked up then. My dad's sick of seeing Blair's coworkers on TV telling stories about how weird he was. So why didn't they speak up back then? My parents blame everyone for everything. They blame Roger for the kidnapping, and they want to see him fry. They blame Harvard for educating him, Brown for employing him, my school for not running a stronger background check, the mall for letting him keep that lease when he never even opened a shop. You know, my mother says, the Ellen Show called, and they still want to fly you out for the special, and the invitation's not going to last forever. It's been a few months now, John. It's time to act. My dad sighs. Penny. My mom puts her hands up. They would settle for a Skype. Mom, I mean it. I don't want to be basement boy anymore, okay? When she drinks wine, she gets gloomy. She talks about justice. They're not even looking for Blair anymore. But if you put yourself out there, they'd have to. Penny, my dad says, he doesn't want to go on TV. You mean he doesn't want to leave Chloe? She pounds her little fist on the table. John, the girl won't even eat supper with us, and you put your whole life on hold for her. My dad butts in. Pen, leave it alone. I won't leave it alone. The girl is sucking the life out of him. I'm not going to stand by and watch it happen. Her texting and her emailing all the time. Mom, I told you. That's how we like to hang out. I just don't feel like going out and doing stuff. My mom rubs her forehead. I think this wine is bad. My dad laughs. You want to switch to the hard stuff? But my mom is on a mission. See, you boys don't understand. It's a civic duty. The man kidnapped you, and for all we know, he could be out there kidnapping someone else. You do everything you can to stop that. To hold him accountable, to keep your story in the news. You want to sit around here and go on and on about it and talk to your little friend Chloe at all hours, but this doesn't do anything. You need to talk out there. My dad kicks me under the table. He winks. Once he told me that my mother is a cat. You have to play with her. Let her chase the string. She gets going like this, you can't stop her. She says we all deserve a little sunshine, a free trip. She's sick of being here, sick of seeing me waste my time up in my room. My dad tries to lighten things up, makes a joke about how this is just Mom's ploy to go find Dr. McDreamy. But she isn't laughing. It's McSteamy, she says. The one I like is McSteamy. My dad looks at me. Chime in here any time, son. But our house is sour and I can't fix it. My mom sighs. You know, unlike you two, I live in reality. And the reality is that before you know it, some other kid's gonna get kidnapped. The Ellen people will be all over him. Nobody stays in the news forever, John. Just think about it. You'll feel better with some structure in your life. That's all I'm trying to do for you. I see her trembling. I gulp. I know, Mom. When I speak, the whole atmosphere changes. It's hard to explain. It's my fault. It's their fault. We don't know how to have dinner together. They got used to me not being here. We all know this isn't fun for anyone. It's not what any of us expected. None of it is. I don't ask if I can leave the table to go up to my room anymore. I just pick up my plate and put it in the dishwasher. They wait until I'm gone to talk about me, but I can always hear them as I reach the top of the stairs. Well, what does the shrink say? It hasn't been that long. He'll get bored of that room eventually, right? I close my door and I see her green light. Relief. Chloe. John. Hi.
Hi.
Chicken? Salmon. My dad's going to McDonald's, LOL. Huh. We had chicken. My mom's plotting to take down the Nashua Police Department. Ah, Friday. Ah, family. John. Chloe. Silence. This happens sometimes. And then I see those dots and relief washes over me. Sorry, getting stuff together for prom tomorrow. Prom? Cool. Do you want to see my dress? Of course I want to see her dress. I want to stand next to her. I want to hold her hand and wrap flowers around her wrist. The wanting sets off my jets. The Dunwich sizzle. I close the computer. This might be me blowing my chance. Again. The next morning I have a Google alert about Roger Blair. A woman who runs a shelter for battered women in Portland, Oregon, wrote an article about Roger Blair. She knew him as Magnus Villers. She met him while she was an undergrad at Harvard. He was doing research on solitary confinement. She was strapped for cash, so she signed up. She says she was in dozens of experiments. There were things going on with her family. She was all over the place, and she didn't realize that the release forms weren't standard issue. He put her in a room, and he turned off the lights. He released rats. She could hear them, and she bloodied her hands trying to get out of there. When he finally turned on the light, there were no rats. It was only a tape. She didn't report him to the school. She just left. I Google the name Magnus Villers, and the first stuff that comes up is Chianti, but then I go to Twitter, and there he is. At Magnus Villers. His profile picture is a hamster eating an Oreo, and the goosebumps are immediate, the chills. He hasn't tweeted in years, but when he was active, he was a vicious, bitter nutcase, assaulting Science magazine, prize-winning professors, tagging Harvard and Brown, accusing them of being closed-minded hacks. He sounds like someone who really did lose his mind, as if his mind fell out of his skull and into a gutter. The relief is enormous. Nothing is as scary as it was. He's crazy. He fucks with people's minds, but he can't really do anything. He got to me. But now I see him. All of him. I grab the Dunwich Horror and read the letter he wrote me. And it doesn't feel mysterious now. It sounds loony. I leaf through to one of the parts he underlined in the story, a part that I now think is important. The diary as a madman's raving. I forgot that the world is messy.
Girls faint. Small dogs die. Boys get kidnapped. It's not a symphony, it's just life. Meanwhile, I reactivate my Facebook account just so I can see her. I have to see her. Prom pictures are starting to show up. Chloe's dress is a two-piece, and her hair is swooped up like you're not allowed to touch it. She looks sad. I did that when I blew her off. But it's still light out. I can fix this. I open my door and scream, "Dad, do you still have your tux?" That got my mom's attention, and it's the first time she's bouncing around since she lost Cody. "Maybe you'll be prom king, honey." My dad rummages through his closet for his old tux, and my mom claps the dust out of his dress shoes. It's like Shakalis and Beverly are always telling me, PTSD is a monster, but one of these days, boom, you'll feel better. My dad pulls the suit out of the closet. "John," he says, "she's all yours." It's true what they say about riding a bike. You really don't forget. The wind whips at me and I'm pumping. I forgot how beautiful the world is when you're a part of it this way. When the sun is relenting and the moon is rising and the night is magic. It can change your life if you let it, if you pedal. I haven't even kissed her yet, and already I feel different. I am nervous, but it's the good kind of nervous. Chloe's at Noelle's with the whole mess of friends for pictures, and I'm almost there, slowing down as I approach Noelle's street, as my heart expands, a balloon. I'm not used to exercise, not used to love. I see them all exactly as they were online, the girls in bright dresses, the boys in tuxedos lined up on the front lawn of Noelle's house, posing. I slow down the tiniest bit. I'm scared. I wish I was on a motorcycle instead of a bike. But then again, I'm kind of like a celebrity around here. None of them got invited to go on Ellen. And when they see how much Chloe loves me, the smile that will spread over her face, the way she'll run over to me, they'll be on board with it. Me. I start to ride again, but they're piling into the limo, one by one. I'm way farther away than I realized, and it's like a horror movie. The way they don't stop, the way they disappear into the car. I pump, I ride, but I'm not fast enough. The brake lights on the limo light up. Red. A plume of smoke shoots out of the exhaust pipe. It's no use. I slow down and jump off the bike. All the buttons on my shirt are popped. I look like a nutcase. The limo rounds the corner. There's always more time until there isn't. And it reminds me of the most important text that Chloe sent about tonight. The actual prom is lame, but Noelle's pool parties are fun in this cheesy way. Do you remember playing Marco Polo as a kid? You should come. So now I will. The ride home is better. I ride shirtless. A couple of random girls whistle at me. I'm handsome. I'm free. I'm loved. I have to be. No girl would text you that much if she didn't love you. No girl would keep asking you to come over. And this is a night when girls want big things to happen. I think it's going to be good we waited to see each other. And I'm happy I don't have to be on a loud, crowded dance floor pretending to like songs I don't know. I remember something Roger Blair tweeted. "There's always more time until there isn't. You are born dying. Science could fix this, but they won't. # progress requires pain." Maybe he's right. Maybe it's finally our time.
Chloe, I have to say, Noelle is right. I did look like a slut in that dress. I hate that word. But there are girls who can wear that dress and project confidence. There are girls who want to show it all off. Shake what your mama made. I was only wearing it for the pictures, hoping to get under John's skin, break his heart a little. I wanted him to see me in that dress and fill up with regret. The dress was wearing me, and if he even bothered to look at pictures, He was probably revolted by the desperation of it all. I keep thinking this is it. The end. Next year, I'll be in college painting, and Noelle and Marlene will be these people I talk to once in a while. Next year, I'll be myself. No more this. No more hanging out with people I don't even really like at 40 steps. No more home. Part of me wants to leave now. Pull an Irish goodbye and sneak out of the room. Swim down to the drain and squeeze myself in there. Out of my life. My life here that didn't work out. That stupid dress. I really did think something would happen tonight. I thought John would feel something. Feel something and do something. I watched the door all fucking night, waiting for him to charge into the ballroom and profess his love in a John Hughes kind of way. But he didn't. And that's that. I think of Carrig flipping off that guy in the parking lot when I broke up with him. I get it. I did dance with Care once. I tried to be nice. I wished him luck with his soft whore, and he kept his hands on my waist, like an eighth grade boy. "Can I say something?" he asked. "Sure." "Chloe," he said, "just be careful."
"Be careful how?"
"If a dude likes you," he said, "he shows up. We're dudes. We're simple." All at once, I could hear what everyone had been whispering. Poor Chloe throwing herself at John, and he won't even see her, and Carrig's new girl is actually hotter, and he's happier, and poor Chloe's at home on her computer. It's so sad, so sad. Now prom is over, and half the senior class is at Noelle's. I jump into the pool in my dress, because the dress failed. I failed. Noelle is barefoot on the deck.
"Dude," she says to me, "one line."
She's been all over me to experiment. "Maybe in a bit," I say.
"You're an artist, Chloe. At least Papa Molly."
I eat a pot brownie, and this night is a nightmare. It's too crowded in the pool. Too many bodies everywhere. People we're not even friends with. People I never want to see again. People who didn't show up to the vigils. I am unattracted to everyone on every level.
I want John. I miss John. I was so brave about New York because I thought he'd be there with me. But now it's hitting me. He's not going. I'm going alone.
I remember what John only just told me a few days ago. That a younger banana will suck the life out of an older banana. I painted those bananas. I sent him the picture. He wrote back, "I love this so much." That's not, "I love you so much."
But how could he love me? I'm not a good person.
Once he asked me why I was still friends with Marlene and Noelle. I tried to be cute. "They're assholes, but they're my assholes, you know?" He LOL'd, but I bet he was horrified. That's a terrible thing to say about your friends. I tried to take it back, but he said my name. Chloe. And then I said his name. John. And then there was a beat of silence. The lull. I read so much into that silent bridge between our names. I thought that was love. Marlene offers me a spiked seltzer.
"You okay, Chloe?"
"I'm okay," I say, popping the can of caustic semi-booze I'll never drink again after this summer. "I think I had too much of that pot brownie." Marlene reaches for my bottle. "Oh, no," she says. "You don't want to mix. It's early." We both hear it at the same time. Noelle,
blowing her whistle. Someone shuts off the music, and someone is here. It's him. It's John. The love must be written all over my face because Carrig glares at me. Carrig? I forgot he was here. I'm trying to swim closer, but Marlene grabs my arm. Whoa, she says. You look like you're drowning. And at the other end of the pool, on the patio, there they are, Noelle and John. She points her fingers at the door. Out, she says. Invite only. John is so quiet, it's hard to hear him. I just want to say hi to Chloe, he says. I try to yell, but the damn brownie won't let me do much of anything. I can't lift myself out of the water. I can't make it to the stairs. Noelle's hands are on her hips. You can practically see the coke in her eyes. I ask Marlene to go up there, but she looks at me like I'm crazy, and I get it. Noelle is scary. In third grade, we did a dance routine. Noelle was the choreographer. It was terrifying how she cut us down when we couldn't get the steps right.